Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. On the 283rd episode of the podcast, we are going to wade into some brand new waters. At least I think so. I don't think we've talked about experiences with guides, and I certainly haven't talked a lot about my experiences as a guide, even though I only did it for a few seasons on the podcast. Maybe a few references here and there to both of these topics, but never an entire podcast episode about it. But I've been thinking about this a little bit, both because of a book review I just published this week, as well as the fact that I'm looking at a couple of opportunities this season to go out with some guides. And I thought it would be a worthwhile thing to share some experiences I've had with hiring professional anglers and with whatever I did back for a few seasons when I was taking people fishing as an encouragement to you as you think about getting out on the water with somebody and using your hard-earned dollars to go fishing. Now, as I've said recently in my Cast One series, I think getting a guide is a very, very important and helpful thing. It's not just about getting out and catching fish after fish after fish, because a lot of times that won't happen. The guides have no control over the mouths and the brains of the fish, and certainly not about the flows of the river and the weather that's happening. And they have even less control over your skill set. But that's actually something they can work on with you. And in that, you can really find the benefits of a guide. And I have found over my years of being taken out by guides that the things I pick up from that day and the amount of money spent on that day, either if it's money I spend or it's a gift to me or something like that, that really is an investment into the way I look at fishing in the future. And so it's way more than one day out on the water, and it's way more than how many fish that guy can get in the boat with your fly in that fish's mouth. So actually, I'll start off right there. One of the most beneficial things that I've done is being guided for striped bass in my home waters. And I was I went out with my dad actually probably 5 or 6 years ago. It was quite a while ago when I really started fly fishing from the shore a lot more. So I do mostly surf casting with a fly rod for striped bass, and I have a lot of fun with it. I've had some good experiences with it, and I love how simple it is. You literally find some places where the currents are coming together. You find a place where there's some submerged rocky structure, and then you just bomb out double hauls as far as you can and strip it in at a good pace. You do that for 15, 20 minutes while the kids are doing something else. Then you put the fly rod down, wade back in, play, have lunch, and go back out, do it again. Absolutely love kind of mixing in that experience with hanging out with my family at the beach here in New England. But one of the things that, like I said, had a big influence on the way that I saw what I was doing on the shore and helped me look at it from a couple different perspectives is being taken out on a boat in similar waters to where I hang out and where I fish, and hitting it from the opposite side, and having that perspective of being both on the surface of the water, you know, 100 yards out, and seeing kind of what's happening from the current on the other side of the waves and from the ocean side, and having the guide talk me through some of the different things that I was seeing from the offshore perspective, not offshore like blue water, right? But like not being on the shore, not short surf casting, and just having him walk through things that I can look for as I am on the sand and I'm looking for places to cast for stripers. I mean, that was so beneficial. As fun as it was to go catch fish in places that I would never reach if I were to be surf casting or wading out into the surf. And that was a lot of fun to go catch fish off structure, off of pylons, all sorts of stuff that were out in the deeper water. to have him cruise along and trace the contour of the shore and point things out to me, where I should be walking, where I should be casting, how deep I should be wading, things I should be paying attention to. Those things were incredibly helpful. And although I didn't necessarily catch fish while we were doing that, to get that perspective was huge. So that's just one small example of how the investment in one day of fishing can yield fish, but it can also kind of invest in and pay forward opportunities to catch fish on your own in the future. Something else that a guide might do is stretch you. Sometimes he has to stretch you. If the fish are rising or feeding a distance that is beyond your capabilities at present to cast, he's going to have to stretch you. He's going to work with you to try to get that cast out 10 feet more. And that's something that you need to understand is part and parcel of being in his or her hands. He can't make the fish come in 20 feet closer because that's as good as you can cast. He may not be able to put the boat in a place that's 10 or 15 feet closer because of the nature of the current or because of what that would do to the presentation of your fly. And so if a guide says, we need to work on getting your cast out a little bit further, then that's something to absolutely pay attention to. I had an experience that was a little bit like this, only it wasn't out of necessity, although I guess it was, because this is somebody I talked to a number of times before we went fishing. We talked about fishing, we talked about life, we talked about faith, we talked about all these things, and then when it came time for me to go fishing on this particular river, he was the first person I thought of. And so we already had a kind of a quasi-relationship prior to getting out on the river together. And so he knows that I do casting across. He knows that I like to teach. He knows that I like gear. He knows all of those things. And so at this point in time, I'd never done double-handed casting before. And so before we even hopped in the boat, he said, hey, you know what? This is a perfect run where we're going to put in for trying double-handed casting. He said, we might not catch any fish, but I think because of what you like to do, what you like to talk about, the fact that you like to learn new things and new techniques, this would be a fun thing to do before we really get into hunting for fish. And I was a little skeptical. I mean, I was ready to go. There was even fish that were coming up already downstream in some of the glassier water. That was really what I wanted to do, was catch fish on dry flies. And so I had to kind of buck my own singular focus and really lean into this great wisdom that he was giving me. And this, him really tailoring the day to my big picture desires and expectations. In that moment, I was singularly focused, but he had paid attention to me and our conversations and said, this is something that you probably would want to try. So for about 45 minutes to an hour, he worked on me and getting a double-handed cast and then the presentation that went along with it using that particular gear. And lo and behold, the first fish of the day came on a swung wet fly using this technique and this equipment. And I absolutely enjoyed it. And you know what? He never brought it up again that day. So I don't want to make more of it than it was, but he had heard me. He had listened to me. He had received kind of an understanding of who I am and what I like to do. And he gave me an opportunity. He didn't force me to do it. He didn't, tie the thing to my hands, glue my palms to the cork of his double-handed rod. But at this point, I'd never done it before. He said, this is something you should at least say you've done and you have an opportunity to catch a fish. And sure enough, beautiful brown trout came into the net just during this little casting exercise. And so all that to say, you're going to learn skills that you may be apprehensive to learn. You may be, like I just kind of alluded to, you may be a little bit reluctant to give up the thing that you really, really want to do, or you think that you really want to do, in lieu of another opportunity that the guide is presenting you with. But assuming that you've hired this person because you think that they know what's best and you are putting your time and your energy in their hands, it's certainly willing to, you should be willing to hear them out. You should be willing to entertain the opportunities that they give. And if it's just not working, then articulate that. Don't be a grump. Don't, just start docking $10, $15, $20, $25 off of the tip at the end of the day because of that experience. But genuinely, consider why they're doing what they're doing and have that conversation if there is any skepticism or questions. So as I said before, I have spent some time guiding. It was a long, long time ago, and I did it for trout on smaller rivers and bass on large rivers in the mid-Atlantic. And one experience that happened multiple times to me was that somebody would show up for a trip and they would bring a friend along. Now, all of my guiding was done walk and wade. So it wasn't like they were asking to put somebody in the boat with us that wasn't paying or that they were, you know, splitting the fee. It was they had brought a friend along because they, you know, that person wanted to fish also. Now, on the surface, that is not a problem. And I would not discourage anyone from doing that, particularly in a walk and wade trip. But the concern comes when that person that you are not guiding starts to really impose upon the time. One particular situation that actually it was interesting because the client I was guiding really wanted to catch a trout in a particular pool. And we could see the fish, and I walked him through where he had to be in a positioning standpoint, what flies would be beneficial, tied on a couple of nymph rigs because it was a really deep pool. And this pool was a notorious pool for being difficult to catch the fish that you could see. And I think we've all had this experience before, where there's the reason why you can see the fish is because the fish know that even if they can be seen, they can't be caught. And this pool, the reason for that was that the hydrodynamics of the pool made it very difficult for a fly to get in front of these fish. So these fish were immune not only from flies coming in front of their face from a presentation standpoint, they were immune from being snagged or, you know, whacked at. These things were as safe can be, even though you could see them. And it seemed like the kind of place where you could really just easily put some flies in front of these fish. And so everyone tried to catch them. So not only were they kind of safe, they were also wise because they were just used to people trying anything and everything. And I explained this to my client. I said, you know, we can make a couple casts to these fish, but it almost has to be a perfect storm of fly rig and cast to get it right in front of these fish. And then even when that happens, as soon as they see your fly, they're going to more than likely reject it. And I said, but there's plenty of other pools, including the tail out of this pool, that are helpful. But he wanted to post up at the top of this pool, effectively right on top of these fish, and make a couple of casts. And so I wasn't going to say no to him. But that couple casts turned into 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And at this point, I'm sitting there and saying, well, let me know if you want to try a different fly or if you want to try a different pool. No, no, I'm fine. I like this. This is good. And I think he just really wanted me to be there and to net this fish when he inevitably caught it. Well, long story short, he never caught this fish. But I sat there for a long time, encouraging, gently. You know, you never want to force someone to do it. I know there's some guides that will do that. But this was a, you know, medium-sized trout stream. I wasn't on the bonefish flats. It was what it was. Well, by this point in time, his friend came up. And he kind of observed what was happening, and he was questioning the angler's motives, the guy who was paying. And so he and I got to talking, and I was able to give him some pretty decent advice on where to go catch fish. And he went and caught a fish, came back and reported it, and his friend wasn't fazed by it. And then we went downstream and caught another fish and came and reported on it. And this guy was a relatively new angler. He had not spent much time on the water. And so he was actually seeing the results of heeding my advice. And he was getting excited about it. And his friend, who had been fishing for a long time, who really wanted to catch this one fish, he was not changing his tactics or his approach or anything like that, regardless of what I said. Or even at this point in time, his friend started saying, you should listen to Matt. You should listen to what he's saying. You should go try these places. There's more fish up there. There's more fish doing the same thing. And he was very resolute in his ways. So I want to say it was probably 45 minutes to an hour. And then finally I said, hey, listen, you know, you've got a 8 hour trip or 6 hour trip, or whatever. Let's move on. If you want to come back here and continue to do what you're doing after our time is up, then I want you to do that. But I really want to get you into some fish. And I think maybe that economic piece of it is really what broke him out of his hypnosis. And we went and we caught some fish. But as soon as we were done, he was right back in that spot. And as far as I know, he's still there today. That may be a unique situation, but generally speaking, if you look at a guide's, pay or rate chart, it's a different price for two anglers for one period of time, as opposed to one angler for one period of time. Because if anyone who has had two children or who had had two subordinates at work or anything like that, you know that it is not 50-50. And it's usually more than 100% gets given at any one point in time, because that's required. And so don't, if you bring a friend along for a walk and wade trip or something like that, then there's certainly some decorum that needs to be practiced. And some people might even not look very favorably on that situation. But in this situation, it worked out pretty well for me and for my client that this guy was able to encourage him to listen to me. The last little anecdote that I will share is not even my own. So it's not my experience with a guide, nor was it my experience guiding, but it was a friend who's a guide and how he made a habit. And a lot of guides do this. If you want to bring your own equipment, these are kind of the best choices that you can make. This is the parameters for rod weight and rod length. This is the kind of equipment that we're going to be using, because this person's been on the water and they know these kind of things are going to be the best fit for what you're going to be doing that day, that season, under those conditions, whatever it may be. Now, this guy had a guy on the boat who had a custom made bamboo fly rod. And it was like a, so this guy's fishing on a medium-sized trout river in the mid-Atlantic. So not that big of water. I mean, small river by many standards. And he was usually fishing, four, five weights, maybe sixes. This guy had this 7 foot long, one piece bamboo fly rod that he said was not that different, both in thickness and in flex, of a broomstick. A lot of times we joke about fast action fly rods being like a broomstick. He said this thing was legitimately so stiff that it hardly flexed the tip, even when it was casting a 7 weight fly line with a full brace of flies on the end of it. And so he absolutely let this guy give it a shot, and he was casting. And was really struggling in making delicate presentations, as you can imagine. And he was encouraging him, hey, I've got a couple of the rods in the boat. Why don't you give this a shot? But he was completely sold on catching fish on this rod. And a lot of times you're going to have a guide who is skilled and experienced enough where he is able to work around your stubbornness, work around your deficiencies, both in skill and equipment, to help you get what you need to. But of course, there's going to be some point where there is a point of no return. There's going to be a place where you just can't do it, or your equipment just can't do it. And it was interesting. He said that the first fish that he actually got into that day, that he lucked into that day, it was a larger fish. But as soon as this thing turned and ran, it snapped off. And wouldn't you know that the client looked at the guide and said, "You're not broke." Well, as you're probably aware, anything that is less than like 20-pound test, if that fish is of any size or gets into the current and turns around and starts running away, and it has zero flexibility, so there's no buffer, there's nothing absorbing that shock in the tip of that fly rod, it is going to snap off. I mean, think about how do you snap off a fish, or you snap off a tangle. I mean, you point that rod tip directly at that thing, and you lock down your line. And it's going to pop because it's pulling straight against that reel. And that's precisely what was happening from this person's, 7.5 foot custom built 7 weight fly rod, where the fish had nothing to do, nowhere to go. And so it snapped off right away. And so what did my friend do? He retied and they went back to fishing, and he continued to encourage him to try with another rod. And what he did is actually ended up being very, very helpful and beneficial, is that they stuck with it with streamers, and this guy did not get any more fish. And they came up to a new pool, which was a nice glassy surface. He found something that was the most extreme example of where this particular rod would not work. And he put them in that situation, midges far away with a very, very glassy surface. And so he said, "Listen, I have a 9 foot 4 weight. and it is going to do what you need in this pool. What you were using, your rod, your beautiful, wonderful rod that you had made, was good in the kind of fishing we were doing, but now we have something different. And so reason didn't work, through coercion, he got him to fish a different setup, and it changed the tenor of that day, and he got him to fish. But again, you're going to run into people who are stubborn. You might be stubborn. I think we're all stubborn to a certain degree, but you have to remember that the guide gives you those parameters of, if you want to use your gear, you know, try to keep it within these parameters. And if I recommend, or if he recommends, or she recommends, that you switch over to something else, there may be a reason for it. He's not trying to take away your fun from using your custom-built, you know, rod. He's not trying to take away your fun from using the rod that you might have spent a lot of money on in the last few years, or even just a couple days ago. But, you know, that's another issue too that we could talk about at length. Is, you know, someone just drops $1,000 on a brand new fly rod, and it's just not the right thing for what they're doing. I had that once happen to me, and I know I'm running late, where I got a new rod and I brought it along, and I thought, okay, I'll fish this rod for streamers if we get into certain situations. But the guy said, you know, that's a really nice rod for this situation, that situation, but for what we're going to be doing today, I wouldn't use it. And so I had this thing in the boat, and we looked at it and we played with it, but it wasn't the right rod. And you can't be offended. I mean, it's not a personal attack. At least the guide might be thinking you're an idiot for buying that rod and bringing that rod, but he hopefully won't be saying that. So a couple of quick stories to hopefully give you some perspective on what to expect and what to know as a client when you are hiring a guide. And a lot of it comes down to communication. Every one of these things that I talked about today, both wanting to see the striper fishing that I did from a different perspective and get a professional's opinion, taking somebody out on the water and having them be stuck in their ways, either with the gear they're using or the place that you're fishing, and having enough conversations with a guide that he knows what you want to do, where you want to go, and maybe things that might be the kind of thing that really gets you going out on the water. Those are all really beneficial, and it really all comes down to communication. So talk to your guide. Don't be a clam. And if you are a clam, if you don't speak up, if you don't share what you want, what you don't want, what you like, what you don't like, and they do something that's well within the reasonable range of what a guide should do for a client, but you don't like it because you didn't speak up, that is not on them. That's on you. I mean, if you don't like talking, hopefully they're not going to talk your ear off, but then you can't complain when they don't ask you your opinion on this, that, or the other. If you just say, oh no, it's fine. It's fine. When it's really not fine. Never say it's fine when it's not fine. That's good marriage advice, and that's good fly fishing advice. Well, I've got plenty more stories, plenty more of my own personal experiences on both sides of the equation, and then lots and lots more from folks that I know that have done this for a lot longer than I have. And so inevitably, this will find its way back into the rotation of the podcast in the future. If you have a remarkable story or account, don't hesitate to let me know. Matthew@castingacross.com. Always great to hear from you. This week on the website, the first article is called Really Believe the Fly Fishing Unbelievable. And this was a book review from Ryan Johnston. I first kind of came across Ryan when I was writing an article about Cast Hope, which is a fly fishing nonprofit that gets kids involved and invested in the outdoors through fishing. He is one of the co-founders of that project. But this is his second book about his experience as a guide. So if I were to just summarize my review in a very quick way, it would be that this is the kind of book that even if you're not a huge reader, you could definitely pick up. You can read chapter at a time, whether that is just, you know, right before you fall asleep, whether that is you keep it in your car and you get stuck between appointments, you maybe keep it in the restroom, you know, whatever it may be. You can knock out these 5-6 page chapters really quick, and the stories are good. He's a good communicator, and it's definitely worth picking up. So check out that article, and there's a link for that book over on that reviews page over at castingacross.com. Then Wednesday's article is called The Kind of Moxie It Takes to Be Anadromous. How's that for a title? So earlier this week, a tanker truck from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife turned over on its way to stock juvenile salmon in one particular river. Well, it turned over, the side of it gashed open, and all of these little juvenile salmon came flopping out onto the side of the road. But wouldn't you know it, it was also next to a different river, and about two-thirds of these 100,000 juvenile salmon flipped, flopped, and otherwise splashed their way into the Looking Glass River, or Looking Glass Creek, can't remember which one it was. So they ended up somewhere, not where they're supposed to be, but they ended up somewhere. And the quick commentary that I make on this post on Wednesday, so this is actually the story of how a lot of fish ended up in a lot of places, accidental and otherwise. And who knows? I mean, who knows what's going to happen to these fish? Oregon thinks that they may very well make it to where they were supposed to be, and be able to come back and spawn in the Looking Glass. And so it's just an interesting story, particularly because the guy's okay, and most of the fish made it out just all right. This week's recommendation is a product that's been out for a long time, and it's something I've talked about before, but I feel like it does the best job at what it does, and that is the Rig Keeper from Smith Creek. Smith Creek is a New Zealand company, and they make lots of little gadgets and things like that, but the Smith Creek Rig Keeper is a little foam kind of sleeve or sheet. I mean, it's about the size of a checkbook, maybe a little smaller than that. And it has places for you to put your dropper fly, and then you wrap the bit of tippet that leads up to your lead fly, and then there's a place for that thing to go. And you can do that with a dozen or so. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, about, it has 8 slots, but of course you can double up. I never have that many on there, but the cool thing about it is, one, it spaces things out. I've got a couple of devices where you kind of roll the tippet, and so you have to go around, I mean, 25 times to get even like a 2 foot length of tippet to wrap up. And then the thing's all coiled up when you take it off. It works, not ideal. But this one, you can, it's a little bit of a wider wrap, so you're not going to have that memory, especially in smaller tippet diameters. But then also it has these raised bumps so that if you were to drop this in your pack or drop this in your vest, it's not going to, your flies aren't going to be smashed. And if you have it so that you are clipping it to something on the exterior of whatever you're wearing, because there is a point to do that also, they're not going to be, you know, as you brush your hand down, your hand's not going to go up against some hook points or things like that. It's just a clever little thing. $24.99. You can get it on Amazon Prime. And that's actually where they send you if you go to their website. But I'll put a link to the Rig Keeper from Smith Creek over on this page's show notes over at castingacross.com. And as always, if you hear me recommend a product or a website or a whatever it may be, and you have questions or comments, particular use comments, what would you do in this situation? How would it work out for this? Whatever. Don't hesitate to let me know. Matthew at castingacross.com. I'm happy to share my opinions, even if there's, you know, potentially something that's, you know, that you might think, hey, would this not work in this situation? I'm happy to give my honest opinion on that. And so don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing podcast. Please subscribe in your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast in iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.